I usually like to, when we kind of get started at a youth rally, you know, which is kind of typically Friday night, right? We get here Friday night, we kind of kick it all off, and I'm used to saying, hurry, because it's almost over. Like, that's kind of my big spiel. I'm like, man, this thing is almost over. Like, is even like when you're getting ready to come to the youth rally, you're thinking, man, the whole weekend, but it just blows by so fast. And today, my first time to get up in front of you and say that, it's even worse because it's already Saturday. We're like leaving. And some of you, I think, have to leave today, right? Don't some of you have to leave today? Who's leaving today? Who are we losing today? Oh, not many? Not many? Okay, just a couple? All right. Oh, okay, that's awesome. So everybody will be here tomorrow? We're all going to stay till Sunday, most of you? Okay, oh, cool. Okay, but it's still terrible. It's just tomorrow, right? It's over tomorrow. That's it. You only have like 24 hours and we're all going home. And so the reason I say that is to say, don't hesitate to get to meet people. Don't hesitate to, you know, cross the aisle. Because we're kind of like, you know, everybody in the church, you get your seat that you like. I always kind of sit over here. I kind of do that in every church building I go to. I'm like over on that side for some reason. That's a weird thing. I feel like I'm such an inventive, outside-of-the-box thinker, and I totally go to the same seat every time. That's how habitual I am. So you're probably sitting in your favorite seat, but that's okay. So like cross the aisle, get to meet people, because time is almost up. It's almost up. But really thankful for you guys for being here. This is going to be cool. Okay, so let me turn on my Bible and talk about how we shouldn't be addicted to technology. Okay, because here's the kind of the title that I have for you right now is, can we become enslaved to technology? So we're kind of talking about the presence of technology, some of the struggles with it, but then my point here this morning, or what I'm going to look at a little bit, is becoming enslaved to technology. But let me do this, okay? I'm going to read to you Psalm 139, so if you have your Bible, open it, scroll to it, whatever your situation is. Psalm 139, I'm going to do the first, well, I'm actually going to do verse 0. So let me ask you this, does everybody have verse 0 in Psalm 139? You're like, what are you talking about? Yeah, you're going to have to open your Bible to find out what I'm talking about. How many of you have verse 0 in Psalm 139? You got it? Seriously? That's what I'm talking about? Someone has a holy version? Who has verse 0? And what does verse 0 say? Give me verse 0. I'm serious. It's absolutely true. What's verse 0 say, Andrew? Okay. Yeah, okay. The choir master, Psalm of David. Okay, does everybody else now, do you see verse 0? Because mine actually says verse 0. Mine, I mean, I've never heard anybody say, let's open to Psalm 139 and verse 0. You're like, whoa, that's new in the church, right? And change is tough. But imagine saying, we're just going to read, my favorite verses are all the zeros in the Bible. And that's the one. Okay, so let me just read Psalm 139. So follow along closely here, because I just really want to look at what God tells us. And I want to look at it in a way that, what he's really talking about. I want to read this version for real. Okay, so Psalm 139, verse 0. For the network admin, an MP3 of David. Verse 1. O Lord, you have Googled me and hacked me. You know when I download and when I upload. You understand my blog from a cloud. You debug my path and my shutdown cycle. And you keylog, ping, and sample everything that I do. Before I post on Instagram, behold, O Lord, you have commented. You have the best, most secure firewall and liked all of my photos. Such a database is too wonderful for me. It's like a million terabytes. I don't have that many files. So you guys know what I'm talking about, right? You know exactly what I'm talking about. It's probably what most of your versions say by now. The hard thing about this whole like technology thing is that enslavement is not always someone forcing you to do something that you don't want to do. That's kind of the typical idea, you know. It's like when we are enslaved in something, we are captured by something, we are owned by something. You know, the idea is that maybe we're doing something that's against our will. But you know what really the more successful slavery is? And I know that's kind of a weird thing to say, but if you want to know what successful slavery is, it's someone being able to convince you that you can't live without something. That's really the most successful kind. And it's the most common kind. It's the idea that you cannot live without this. And now they don't come out right and say that. Because if I told you, if I said, you guys, you cannot live without the lesson I'm about to teach you. It's that amazing. What is your instant response? What's that? Yeah, right. You're like, whatever. Like, I already don't like this lesson. Right. See, and it's kind of weird how and then here's the reverse psychology tricky part. It's like, I'm going to make you like this lesson because I'm telling you that you're not going to like it. And you're like, darn it. It's working. Yes. I know how to make you love this lesson. I'm going to tell you that you're going to hate it. And it's reverse psychology. And then there's reverse psychology where how many times can I say that you're going to like it and you're not supposed to like it, to where you're like, I don't know if I'm supposed to like it or not like it. Now it's like, right, you know. And see, that's what I'm saying is nobody comes out right and says, you're addicted to this, you need this, you're going to fail without this, because we are such fighters, really. I mean, we're such fighters that instantly we're like, whatever, I'm not going to buy this just because everybody else is. Let me ask you, how many of you don't like Justin Bieber just because a bunch of... Yeah, okay, see what I'm saying? We don't... And I'm not even saying that you don't validly not like his music. I mean, that's even fine too. You're like, no, I don't not like him just because everybody else likes him. But you know what I'm talking about. This is a very common struggle, that I am just going to not like what everybody else likes because I just don't want to go along with the crowd. Okay, very natural, guys. This is why reverse psychology works. And most advertisers know this. Like, they want to make stuff edgy. I mean, they want to make things seem like you wouldn't want it, that you wouldn't want to be a part of it. It's a weird thing. They're trying to pull you into this stuff. And so this is not how it always gets presented, that someone's going to convince you, really, that you just can't live without it in very subtle ways. And so the reality is that even God, and so let me just really stick it to God right here. I mean, doesn't God say you can't live without him? I mean, isn't that God's message? I mean, he's saying, you can't live without me, guys. You can't live without me. And that's true. And it's like, you know, he says it very directly. He'll say it indirectly. He gives us reverse psychology sometimes on it. He's like, you don't have to listen to me if you don't want to. Just choose your own way. But he'll do that. He'll say, look, you got to decide. And so here's the principle I kind of want to start with this morning is this idea of enslavement, guys. We only have two options. There's only two options. And we'll see it here. And maybe if you want to open up to Romans 6 here, I'll read it to you. But I want to build up to it by just kind of challenging ourselves with this principle. Is that everybody is enslaved to something. Okay, we're all enslaved to something. Again, you know this. It's a very biblical concept. It's easy for me to talk about that. But the principle in life is just that. Everybody's enslaved to something. And so Romans 6, I'll start in verse 14 there. He says, for sin shall not be master over you. And I'm not going to change the version, okay? Like the psalm, I changed it. This will be normal. All right, for the sin shall not be master over you, for you are not under law but under grace. What then? Shall we sin? Because we are not under law, but under grace, may it never be. Do you not know that when you present yourselves to someone as slaves for obedience, you are slaves of the one whom you obey, either of sin, resulting in death, or obedience, resulting in righteousness? So notice he only gives you two options there, verse 17. But thanks be to God, though you were slaves of sin, you became obedient from the heart to that form of teaching to which you were committed. Having been freed from sin, you become slaves of righteousness. It's just a weird thing. It's like, okay, you're either slaves of sin or slaves of righteousness. And again, Eli, the... I'm proud to be an American and fight for my freedom kind of person. I'm just like, I'm slaves to nobody. Nobody owns me. And God's like, look, everybody is owned by something. It is either righteousness or sin. Okay, and again, that's very distasteful to the world. It's like, nobody owns me. It's like, well, you're owned by saying that. So again, back to how original is the person who says, if everybody likes that, I'm not going to. How original is that, right? I mean, because that was me, right? And 101% of the stuff I talk about in lessons applies to me first, you know, just so you know. Like, I hammer myself with this before I say, you ought to think this way. I thought this way. I was like, if everybody likes that, then I'm not doing it. And guess how original I was? I was the same, yeah. I mean, what about people who say, like, I'm not into religion because I don't just want to do what someone tells me to do. I'm a totally original thinker. I'm an atheist. Now, what's the inherent problem with that? Are they the only atheist in the world? No. They are originally free-thinking, not connected to all the rest of the free-thinking atheists in the world, right? It's like, oh yeah, you're just like the rest of the atheists. No, I'm not. I'm original and I'm totally independent. It's like, no, you're not. You're the same as every other atheist. And so their initial criticism of you, oh, you just go to church because everybody else does. You're just an atheist because everybody else is. I'm like, no, I'm not. Well, how about even this? Like, I'm not a Christian because Christians are hypocritical. You know, I mean, we've heard that in one form or another. I'm not a Christian because Christians are hypocritical. And now I can say to them very confidently, you know, that's why I'm not an atheist, because atheists are hypocritical. It's like, darn it. which church do you go to? Like, whichever one where there's no hypocrites. Like, you're a hypocrite for saying that, right? I mean, everybody's a hypocrite, aren't they? I mean, everybody struggles with something. And so I love being able to tell people, you know, I did. I was a stark unbeliever in God. I hated Christians. I thought the Bible was just a joke. I mean, and I was around religion, so I, like, knew what to attack. You know, I've been to plenty of youth stuff, so I, like, knew where to make fun of church stuff. You know, I knew where your best arguments were, and I'm like, I know that argument. I know how to defeat it, right? So I was, like, super good at being an independent Christian hater. And that's where I was at. And then I realized, and then me and the rest of my friends, like, yeah, we're so original, like, we're away from all that religious stuff. And they're like, yeah, we're our own rulers. And we didn't even realize we were, like, had our own, like, little church, basically. And we, like, obeyed the rules of atheism and obeyed the rules of non-religion, you know. It's so ridiculous. And we thought we were so individual. And this is what Romans is saying, guys. They're saying, look, you are, everybody is a slave to something. Everybody's a, and literally, everyone's a slave to somebody, and this is really what it comes down to then. So here's really our choices, and this is what he tells us here. You have two things you can pick from. One, you get to choose your master, so you have selection over your master. Everybody has a master. You just get to pick it. You get to pick the master. You get to pick the master of righteousness or the master of sin. Then the other thing, the second thing you have, is you choose to prioritize that master. So in other words, you can choose Jesus, but you also, inside of that choice, you have to choose to serve that master. You have to say, like, okay, I'll be a slave to Jesus. And Jesus is like, okay, well, here's what we're going to do. Like, I'm going to lead the way, and you choose to follow him. Or we choose the other side, right? I mean, these are our only choices. This is all we have to choose from. But you have service and you have selection. And when you guys go to a store, what do you like? Yeah, I want selection, right? I mean, seriously, like, what, when you walk into, like, a Super Walmart or a Super Best Buy or a Mega Target, you know, like, these, why do we like the big stuff? Like, what do you like? You go in there, and you're like, I'm in here for a pair of shoelaces, but I want to see trillions of products that I'm not going to purchase. Like, I mean, if you went into, like, a Mega Target, and there was, like, a pair of shoelaces, what would you say? No, and it'd be weird because you're like, how do they know? But they're like, you know, they drone you. So they're like, okay, when you come in, they're just like, we know she wants shoelaces. Get everything else out of there. You know, and it's like, and you're just shoelaces. And you, like, walk in. It's like, hi, welcome. And you come in, and they're like, here's your shoelace. And you're like, whoa. Now, what would you think? You'd be like, this is weird, right? Because I want to walk in past the drums of peanut butter, right? I want to walk in past the stack of bottled waters that I'm not going to purchase, right? I want the Gatorades. I want all the clothing. I want all that stuff, none of which am I going to purchase. And then I, like, comb through all that crud, and I'm like, there's my shoelaces. And I'm super happy, and it makes me feel good inside because I had selection. Selection. But now what else do I want? Because if I go in there and I'm like, oh, they have my shoelaces, they're like, hi, welcome to Target. I'm like, ah! I'm like, we just want to make sure you remember you were here. I'm like, I remember. Like, get your shoelaces, ah! Right? Now, why would that Target not do very well? What are they not offering you there? Yeah, right, no service, right? It's like, okay, you've got the selection, but your service stinks. Isn't that how it works? Like, we go to a restaurant, we want a nice menu, but we don't want someone to come up and be like, yeah, what do you want? Like, I want you to be nice to me, jerk. You know, like, whatever, I'm getting paid whether you like this restaurant or not. You know, it's like, come on, I want service, right? Selection and service is what we want. That's it. That's what makes us happy. That's what makes us, you know, yelp about it. Like, yeah, this was awesome. I like this Target. They had the shoelaces I wanted and nothing else. It was perfect, right? That's what I want, right? And so that's what God tells us. He says, you have got selection, choose your master, and then you have service. Now, it's going to be a little weak on the Satan side of things for service. I mean, he's going to give you what you want or what he thinks you want so that you want him. But the idea of service of you towards your master, that's what he's bringing up. That's what he gives to us. But here's what the reason I want to, or the way I want to tie this into tech, is if I were to say, guys, that, you know what? We just need to get rid of all this tech stuff. We just need to get rid of it and quit using it, and then we would be good Christian people. Now, what might be a little bit illusionary? I mean, seriously, if right now there was no tech, if nobody had phones, no one had iPads, no one had computers, would the world be a more sinless place? Right, like what app did Adam and Eve download that got them in trouble? An Apple. Oh, no. I'm sure that's not, sure it wasn't an Apple. It was whatever a Microsoft fruit equivalent would be. I don't know. It was a Microsoft fruit. I don't know. So what did Adam and Eve download? Right, there was no app in the garden. That wasn't the problem. So in other words, you take, oh, how many commands did Adam and Eve have? Because the Bible, the reason we sin is because there's too many laws and too many commands, right? Well, how many commands did Adam and Eve have? One. Yeah, right, seriously. And let me even spin it this way. What was the one negative command that they had? Don't touch the tree. What else were they told to do? Eat everything I've given you and sleep together all the time. You're like, whoo. Well, it was the Garden of Eden, right? And I know it sounds terrible to say it that way, but that's exactly what he told them, right? He said, I made everything for you to eat and populate the earth. I think Adam and Eve, maybe, I don't know, if they were like, what does thou mean? And then God's like, let me show you a video called Your Changing Body. You know, and he's like, Adam and Eve are like, huh? Oh, like, it's how I made you, it's fine, the devil didn't invent sex, I did, you know, and you're like, I'm still uncomfortable with it. And you're like, God, turn away, you know. And so imagine just the uncomfortable reality of the Garden of Eden, right? But that's all they had to do was eat and sleep, right? Just eat and sleep, right? That's all they had to do. That's all they had to do. And God even tells them, like, of any of the trees in the garden you can eat. You can eat all these trees. And then there's where we learn the principle. Like, your God is this God. He allows the maximum, forbids the minimum. He's always been that way. And I love doing this with young people especially, like, what are the things? Give me the commands of what you can't do. What can't you do? What does God say don't do? What are sins? Just give me some sins. Don't kill. Don't lie. Don't steal. Don't covet. Don't adultery. What do we got? What do we know? We know them. And I know that with each of these, you're kind of according them out just a little bit, right? Because don't use the Lord's name in vain, right? But if it's like, don't lust or like, you know, don't get involved in immorality. I mean, we can according that out to the things that we would struggle with out here in the world. Because, I mean, I've heard people say, like, well, you know, God made those commands before there was internet and before, you know, pornography or these kinds of things were so available. It's like, look, he knew that was coming. That's why he said, you know, watch out for immorality, guard your eyes. You know what I'm saying? Like, God's is not an idiot. I mean, if he knew that Jesus, when he told Isaiah, you know, in 750 some odd years, my son's going to come and they're going to pierce him through and all this stuff's going to happen to him. Like, he knows word for word what's going to happen to Jesus. I'm pretty sure the internet wasn't a surprise, right? If he could see 700 years in the future, could he see 7,000 years in the future? Sure. Right. If he can see a minute in the future, could he see 2 minutes in the future? Yes. So he's not surprised by any of this. And so he gives us these commands saying, guys, don't lust, don't steal, don't covet. You know the thing. And well, okay, what, we got five there, right, at least, that I mentioned. I wish there should be 10 of them, right? We should carve those in a tablet somewhere. Okay, yeah, honor your father and mother. But even like the other ones, like the ones that aren't, you know, obey the Sabbath. No, don't worry about that one. You see what I'm saying? It's like, we know the, you know, sacrifice the lamb, observe Passover. Okay, you're getting too Jewish on me. Like, say, you know just the sins that apply to all of us, right? You know those sins, but how many is it? Seriously, don't lust, don't steal, don't kill, don't lie. What's that? Yeah, right. Don't bear false witness. Which, and let's even say this, that I could even start coupling some of these into overlap. You know, like, don't lie and don't bear false witness. So if you go up and say, that guy stole my car, and you know he didn't, they're like, you're lying. No, I bore false witness. Boom. And you're like, that's, you're a liar still. Okay, right. So I could almost, let's boil it down to three. You've got lust of the flesh, lust of the eye, pride of life, right? That's it. I mean, 1 John's going to tell us you only have three sins that you have to watch out for. Lust of the flesh, lust of the eye, the pride of life. For these are all that is in the world. That's it. You've got those three sins. Now, here's the encouraging part. What can you guys do? What's not a sin? Basketball, eating, drinking, water. Right, right. Yeah, right. Sex with your wife or husband in an appropriate manner, and don't talk about it to me because I'm a father. Okay, so, right, so you see what I'm saying, right? And really, when you start putting some of these big ones in there, you're like, oh my goodness, How big would the list be of the things you can do, folks? Massive. Yeah, you can do everything. It's three things you can't do and a billion trillion things you can do. Who looks at it that way? I never did. Never did I look at it that way. It was like religion's a bunch of rules about what you can't do. Yeah, there's three rules of what you can't do. Religion is a billion rules of what you can do. And technically, if you really want to put a different philosophy on it, I mean, when someone says, like, hey, here's a mansion full of toys and full of video games and full of food and full of awesome stuff, but out that back door, there's a crazy rabid Rottweiler out there. Don't go out there. We're working with him. We might have to put him down next week, but we probably will give him to rescue so some other person could die. We're going to take care of it, so just don't go out that door. I mean, how many of you, I mean, and then you just see, like, everything you've ever wanted in life. I mean, how many of you would be over at that door going, we can't go out this door? You know, that's all that I can think about. Who would do that? And your friends are over there, dude, look at this. They got Halo 27, you know. And they're like, you're enjoying life. You're enjoying all the stuff you can do. Who would be at the door saying, we can't go out this door? You know, we can't go out this door. And then later you see your friend over there, and he's like trying to jimmy the lock. He's like, you know, it's like bolted. And he's like, come on, we got to get this door open. You're like, dude, they said don't go out there. They're working on the situation. You're nothing you can do about it. Leave the dog alone. And you're like, I just got to see if there's really a dog back there. Why? Why do you got to do that? There's like one thing you're told not to do. Isn't that crazy, folks? That is your God. Your God has said, don't go there because it's not good for you. You can do all of this. The world is given to you, but I go to the one door. And so here's where we'll take it for tech today. Here's what I want to take it to. Let's go to Numbers 22. I want to tell you my favorite story. This is my absolute favorite story. And hey, what time we got to quit here? Well, I know. Yeah, I shouldn't even ask that. I know you're going to tell me that. Okay, well, let's do this story real quick, and then we'll wrap it up. But I just want to show you that, and you know this story. This is Balaam. Okay, I'm going to say Balaam. That's how we're going to say Balaam because I was like reading. I'm not like a huge, like, I'm not one of those people who's like, oh, you shouldn't say Abednego, you should say Abednego. I don't care how you pronounce it, really. My favorite thing is when we have visitors at church, like in our Bible class, and we're like going around reading, and then they get like an Obed begat Ebal, and Ebal begat Shemachthai, and there's all these weird names, and they get it, and I'm just like, why did I let them read that verse? And they're just like, and honey, I'd say however you want to say it, it's fine with me. Like, I'm not like an expert in Hebrew who's going to go, that is incorrect. You know, I don't know. I mean, say it however you want. And so, but when it comes to Balaam, because my grandpa was always Balaam, and I'm like, well, he's like this Arabian guy. And anytime you see Balaam, how would you say two A's? Right. Balaam. I just can't see him being called, hey, Balaam, get in here. I'm sure it was like Balaam. So anyway, I just got used to saying Balaam. So if you hear me saying Balaam, you're like, who's he talking about? It's Balaam. Okay, verse 1. So the sons of Israel journeyed and camped in the plains of Moab beyond the Jordan opposite Jericho. Now Balak, who was a Moabite king, the son of Zippor, saw that all of Israel had done to the Amorites. So Israel's traveling. They're going around and they're just trying to set up camp and trying to survive. And so they're so huge of a population, they're just destroying the land everywhere they go, basically. And so this Moabite king is worried about it. Verse 3. So Moab was in great fear because of the people, for they were numerous. And Moab was in dread of the sons of Israel. So Moab said to the elders of Midian, so they go to their leadership there and they say, now this horde will lick up all that is around us like an ox licks up the grass of the field. That is crazy. I mean, they're going to lick it up like an ox licks up grass of the field. I know. Every time I've seen an ox licking up grass, I'm like, whoa. Yeah, I've never seen that in my life. So here's, they're worried about it in that form. And Balak, the son of Zippor, was king of Moab at that time. So he sent messengers to Balaam, the son of Beor, at Pethor. See all these great names? Which is near the river, in the land of the sons of his people. And they called him, saying, behold, a people came out of Egypt, and they covered the surface of the land, and they are living opposite me. Now therefore, please come, curse this people for me. Since they are too mighty for me, perhaps I may be able to defeat them and drive them out of the land. Now check this part out, middle of verse 6. For I know that he whom you bless is blessed, and he whom you curse is cursed. So here's what we know about this guy Balaam. He is Moabite, or part of this society. He's not an Israelite, but he is a prophet, and we're going to see in a minute, he's a prophet of God, of Jehovah, and he's not an Israelite. So here is a guy who has some kind of divine connection with our Creator, And this guy, Balak, knows that. And he says, look, who you bless is blessed, and who you curse is cursed. You've got some kind of power. Please come and help me out. I need to get rid of these people. Now, verse 7, check out what he does. So the elders of Moab and the elders of Midian departed with the fees for divination. What else? What other reading do you have there? Give me some other readings. The fees for divination. Does anybody say like the price of something? Does everybody have the fees for divination? Is that what everybody's version says? Oh, sorry, verse 7. So the elders of Moab and the elders of Midian departed with the fees of divination. Fees for divination. Is that what you got? Fees for divination. What's interesting about that is, so he sends these guys with money to pay for an anti-prophecy. Okay, so how much does divination cost? How much does a negative prophecy cost? So they came up with an amount of money and said, well, I want you to pay the guy to curse these people, right? And so they come to Balaam and they say, here, we've got the money. We've got the cost for divination. So I don't know what that price was, but, you know, $9.99 special divination cost here today. So they bring the money in verse 8. And he said to them, okay, spend the night here and I'll bring word back to you. So they've traveled the distance. He says, I'll bring word back to you as to what the Lord may speak to me. And the leaders of Moab stayed with Balaam. So they stay the night there. And Balaam says, I'll go talk to God and let's see what he says. I'll find out, you know, what I got to do here. And so, verse 9, then God came to Balaam and said, who are these men with you? Has your parents ever said that about any of your friends? Yes. I had some very scary friends. And sometimes I'd bring them home and like they would like come in the door, you know, and they would like gothically like hover in. And they would like, oh, my mom's like, who is that? And I'm like, it's Edward. You know, and they're like, like, I don't know who that is. Right, and what's cool is it doesn't matter if it's, you know, Edward Scissorhands or Edward Cullen. It doesn't matter. Whichever Edward looks gothically enough to you, that's him. You know, it's like, oh. And I wasn't a whole lot better. I was kind of a freak back then, too. I mean, I don't know that that's super changed, but I, like, looked weirder back then to go along with weirdness. And so my parents, they would come and say, who is that person with you? And it's kind of weird when I think about it now for my parents to be like, I just don't like the look of him or her. I had a girlfriend who was very bizarre. And my mom was just like, honey, I just don't think you guys are a match. You're just not a good match. You're like, what are you talking about, Mom? Because she was so weird. She was just a weird person. She was bizarre. She was like, she would just like sit in the corner. And I don't know if any of you ever watched Park and Rec, but it's like Oren, all right? She was like Oren, like this dark-eyed little freak over in the corner. And she's like, honey, what do you see in her? And I'm just like, I don't know, Mom. Probably just she came over. Like she hung out with me. I don't know. I was easy to please. She said hi. And so my mom, though, she would see this person and be like, and my mom is a super sweetheart, and she was just like, I just worried about this person, honey. I don't know that it really, just doesn't seem like it matches your personality. And I said, mine wasn't super great anyway, so she was giving me the benefit of the doubt. Then, but when your parent comes and says, who are these people with you, right? So see God here. I mean, he has this great parental attitude towards Balaam. He's like, Balaam, who are you hanging out with, right? Who are these people, right? And remember, this is a rhetorical question, right? Because remember, God's not asking for information. He asks for you to be honest, right? So he knows who they are, but he just wants to see if Balaam knows who they are. Verse 10, and Balaam said to God, Balak, the son of Zippor, king of Moab, has sent word to me. I could see this guy saying like, God, a king talked to me. It's like a girl talking to me, God. And he's like, yeah, king, right? He says, the king of Moab has sent word to me. You know, and God's like, that's amazing, right? Verse 11. And he said, so here's what Balaam continues to say. He says, so he's telling God this, right? He says, behold, God, there's a people who came out of Egypt. And God's like, tell me more. These people came out of Egypt and they cover the surface of the land. Now come and curse them for me. Perhaps I may be able to fight against them and drive them out. So he's telling God, there's these people who came out of Egypt. There was like these plagues. Sit down. And there was these plagues that came from the sky and these people were kicked out. And God's like, interesting. I think I know what you're talking about. And God's still like, you know, dusting off his frog plague meter. You know, he's like, I know. They went through plagues. I was there. And so he's telling him, God, it's so awesome. We got to curse these people. We got to nail them. Verse 12. So God says to Balaam, don't go with them. You shall not curse these people, for they are blessed. Really? God, what's your deal with these people? Imagine if you're at the park and your kid's playing in the park, right? and you got three kids, they're all playing in the park, having a good time, and you're like over by the water fountain, and then some guy comes up to you and he says, "Hey, see those kids over there, those three? Like, I'm going to kidnap them. You want to help me?" Wouldn't that be crazy? And you're their father? And I'd be like, "Don't kidnap them. They're blessed." And he's like, "No, I'm going to take them right now." "Really? How are you going to take them? Tell me. Let's do this." I'm like, "Okay, what I'm going to do is I'm going to sneak up on them. You, like, be behind me." I'm like, "Perfect." And I will grab all these kids, and that's my band right over there. Got some candy. We'll throw them in there. We got them. We'll sell them across the border. And I'm like, "Right, let's do this. Let's go to the van first. Let's just make sure. Do you have all the right supplies in there?" Right? So we go to the van. Right? He opens it up. He's like, "Yeah, I got like a taser here." I'm like, "Really? How does this thing work?" Wouldn't that be a great day? That would be a good day for me. I'd just be like, "Gig, gig, 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 gig." That is awesome. It's like, I mean, and the hard part is like, I know it's super terrible and I shouldn't say this, but I'd be like, "Is this baseball bat for them too?" it would be a bad day. I mean, when the police officers found that van, they'd just be like, "Oh!" "I just found it that way, sir. I don't know what happened here. I mean, imagine somebody coming to you plotting against your children. That is what's going on here. So this guy is plotting against God's kids, and this prophet saying, "Let's go kill those kids. Let's go kill your kids, God." And God's like, "Yeah, not going to happen here." Verse 13. "So Balaam arose in the morning, as good Balaam should, and he said to Balak's leader, 'Go back to your land, for the Lord has refused to let me go with you.'" We can't kill him. Sorry, verse 14. "The leaders of Moab arose, went to Balak, and said, 'Balaam refused to come with us.'" Verse 15. Now remember this, guys. Here's how, it's not just tech, but here's how anything worldly works against you. "Then Balak again sent leaders," and check this out, "more numerous and more distinguished than the former." When you say, "Satan, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to get involved with that." I mean, you need to see Satan being like, "Okay, okay." And he goes over the corner and then he's like, "How about this?" I mean, it's hard because in my mind, I just like, I want, and I know when he's, you know, resist the devil and he'll flee from you. You know, he will. He'll flee from you to go get more candy is what he does. And then God's saying like, "No, I want him to flee from you. Resist him, he'll flee from you." But you need to know that Satan's strategy is not to leave you alone. It's to flee and to go and to get something bigger, more expensive and shinier to draw you in with. And so that's what they do. They're like, "Okay, let's just send more money and more stuff." Verse 16, "They come back to Balaam and they said to him, 'Thus Balak, son of Zippor, said, let nothing, I beg, hinder you from coming to me.'" Verse 17, "For I will honor you richly and I will do whatever you say to me." It's like, "Name your price and I will do it. Please come then and curse these people for me." And check this out, verse 18. This is like the Nike statement. I want to put it on a bumper sticker, but verse 19 is also in the Bible, unfortunately. But verse 18, "Balaam replied to the servants of Balak." Check out what he says, guys. "Though Balak were to give me his house full of silver and gold, I could not do anything, either great or small, contrary to the command of the Lord my God." That is the coolest statement in all of Scripture, followed by the stupidest one in all of Scripture. Verse 19, "I can't do anything against God." Verse 19, "Now please stay one more night and I will find out what else the Lord might have to say to me." Idiot. Guys, we do this all the time. "He who believes and is baptized shall be saved." Boom! Let's study that one more time. "He who believes and is baptized shall be saved." Right. But you know what? What's the Greek meaning for baptized? It's baptismo, which means to submerge. So he who believes and is baptismoed, if that helps, shall be saved. Let's see what it means to be saved. It means you'll not be lost. What's it mean to be saved? How many times do we go back to God and say, "Let's check that verse one more time. What do you think has changed since the last time you read it?" Nothing. Nothing has changed. Nothing has changed. You know what has to change between Scripture and us for it to work? That's it. You can go back to God as often as you want and say, are you sure this is wrong? Are you sure this is right? Are you positive? I mean, and again, guys, I'm saying I do this all the time. I'm like, I will never do anything contrary to God, but let me ask him one more time if he's absolutely positively sure that lusting after that girl in the bikini is wrong. Let me check. And God's like, yep, still not what you should be doing. I go, all right. All right. Verse 20, God came to Balaam that night and said to him, if the men have come to call you, rise up and go with them, but only the word which I speak to you shall you do. So Balaam arose in the morning, saddled his donkey, and went with the leaders of Moab, right? So he gets his donkey and he says, let's go visit him. Verse 22, this to me is the scariest verse here, but God was angry that he was going. That's super scary. Can you imagine if you went to God and you're like, God, I really want to hang out at this kegger. And he's like, go ahead. And you're like, so I can go? Go. Really? Are you telling me I can go? Yep. All right. See ya. He's like, go ahead. And, you know, where is he going to go? He's like, oh, all right. He's like, I'm going with you. But yeah, go ahead. I think, oh man, that I've never heard that principle before. Imagine God saying, do it. You're supposed to tell me no. It's your call. Man, you need to know your God operates this way. He is going to allow you to touch the tree, right? He's going to allow you to do it. He's like, don't touch the tree. Is it okay if I touch it? You see what happens. Don't say that. Just make me not touch it, right? Force me not to do it. God was angry because he was going. So he's going and he's mad about it. Verse 22 in the middle. The angel of the Lord took his stand in the way as an adversary against him, and he was riding on his donkey, and his two servants were with him. And when the donkey saw the angel of the Lord standing in the way with his drawn sword in his hand, the donkey turned off from the way and went into the field, and Balaam struck the donkey to turn her back into the way. So in a oriental procession, like in the Middle East, they'll have a big stream of people, and they always put the most important person in the front. I'm usually with a couple of guards, but the most important person rides in front. Why do you think that is? You're right, exactly. Because everything behind the camel, super nasty, right? I mean, they're going to go to the bathroom, and they're going to kick up dust. And so you don't want the good person in the back, because then they just have to, like, take all that. And so you put the good person in the front, so Balaam is out front. And so he's riding along, and then the donkey sees this angel that only the donkey can see, and the angel, and then the donkey turns to the side. So imagine Balaam up front with this huge procession of more rich, more fancy dignitaries behind him. So you have like the president's brigade behind him, and he's up there, and all of a sudden his donkey's like, hey, right? And everybody's behind him like, where's Balaam going? And off he goes off, right? And then and he strikes, and he's like hitting his donkey. He's like, get back in the way, right? Verse 24, the angel of the Lord stood in a narrow path of the vineyard, so he smacks the donkey, and the donkey gets back, and they keep going. And he's like, coo-coo-coo-coo, and he's like, okay. So like when your car dies in the middle of the intersection, you're like, come on, and everybody's like, and then finally it starts, you're like, oh, thank you, Lord. And you go, so you go to the next intersection, okay, and so they're still going. Verse 25, when the donkey saw the angel of the Lord, she pressed herself to the wall, because now they're in a thinner spot, and there's this vineyard wall. She pressed Balaam's foot against the wall, so he struck her. So now, and vineyard walls, if you've ever seen a vineyard wall, they're made out of the rocks that they take out of the vineyard, so they're super ugly. They're like really sharp and gnarly. In Napa area, it's a lot of volcanic rock, so it's like really gnarly, sharp rock usually that they pull out of the vineyard. So don't see like a concrete smooth wall with like a barricade. You need to see a rough wall. And so she like moves over and is pressing his foot against the wall. So she's clomping along and she's like, right? You can see him like, and now he's like smacking the donkey a lot harder and more often. So the angel of the Lord went further, verse 26, and stood in a narrow place where there was no way to turn right or no way to turn left. When the donkey saw the angel of the Lord, she lay down under Balaam. So now you're at intersection number three. And there, and you're like in a tunnel. And you're like, kikini, 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 kikini. And people are just, get out of the road, you idiot. You can already hear, you know, because it's California. And so they're just like, you're going to die. You know, they're super mad. And so imagine Balaam's riding along, and the donkey sees the angel, and it's like, I can't go anywhere. So just, foom. And the whole train now is going to, Balaam, what is wrong with your donkey? Right? And he's just, boom. So he's beating the tar out of her. Verse 28, first time in history, and the Lord opened the mouth of the donkey.
Now, the part that I love about this section right here is, and I never really noticed this, it says, and she said to Balaam. I was like, Shrek, quit hitting me. But that's not how it sounded. All right, this is a girl. So she says, what have I done to you that you have struck me these three times? So this little girl donkey. Little girls. Then verse 29, Balaam said to the donkey, how are you talking? No, that's not what he says. She says, why did you strike me these three times? So she's very offended. And Balaam says to the donkey, because you've made a mockery of me. If there had been a sword in my hand, woman, I would have killed you by now. Right? And he's super mad at her. And he says, I would have killed you. And what's he mad about? Because she made a mockery of him. Girls, do not make a mockery of your man. You're like, I don't care if I mock him. I'll just be careful. Because if there had been a sword in his hand. Right? The donkey said to Balaam, verse 30, am I not your donkey on which you've ridden all the days of your life? Have I ever been accustomed to do this to you? And in perfect female fashion, she is winning the argument. In verse 30, he says, no. He's like losing to the donkey. It's like, well, honey, now that I think about it, you're right. Oh, my gracious. Even female donkeys are good arguers. Girls, you win every time. Verse 31. Then the Lord opened the eyes of Balaam, and he saw the angel and the Lord standing in the way with his drawn sword in his hand, and he bowed all the way to the ground, and the angel of the Lord said to him, verse 32, it's like the angel is an animal rights activist. The angel says, why have you struck your donkey these three times? like, I saw you beating your donkey, and it's going to rescue now. So he says, behold, I have come out as an adversary because your ways are contrary to me. In verse 33, here's where we know the angel is a member of PETA. It says, but the donkey saw me and turned aside from me these three times. If she had not turned aside from me, I would have surely killed you and let her live. It's like, I will kill humans and animals will live. That's what she said. That's what the angel says. Like, I would have killed you and let the donkey go. That would have been weird, too. You imagine Balaam riding along and like some invisible like sword. He's like, whoop. And there's just like half of a guy on a donkey. And the donkey's like, I told you. You know? Blood streaming down, you know. Like, yeah. I told you, let me drive. All right. The one time girls do something awesome in the Bible, right? No, I'm just making sure you're listening. Verse 34. And Balaam said to the angel of the Lord, I have sinned, for I did not know that you were standing in the way against me. Now then, if it's displeasing to you, I will turn back. But the angel of the Lord said to Balaam, go with the men, and you shall speak only the words which I tell you. So Balaam went along with the leaders of Balak. So we'll end it right here, folks. Basically, what it comes down to is this. It's a crazy situation for sure. It's really bizarre, and you know, there's some serious and funny and weird stuff in this. But it just really comes down to this. Really, what is it? Because if all your phones disappeared, if all your computers disappeared, if all that went away, folks, you would be just as susceptible to sin as you were before that, you know? And like, kind of like Glenn was talking, it's very true. I mean, I was raised in a generation, too, where you know, you just didn't have computers, you didn't have cell phones, any of that stuff, and we were just as wrapped up in sin, you know? And then when Nintendo came out, our parents were like, that is going to destroy your life and rot your brain, and there will never be anything more destructive than that, where you play a video game. And in fact, I remember we were looking in the Guinness Book of World Records from like 1982 or something, and the world record for playing a video game constantly was like 23 hours. This guy played a video game. He played, you know, Pac-Man for 23 hours. And I was like, child's play. Oh my gracious. I mean, 23 months, that would be somewhat impressive, but even that is no big deal. It's like 23 hours straight, whoop-de-doo. And so we all thought that Pac-Man was going to kill us all back in the day because it had six whole colors. And so, you know, I'm saying it's like, we all thought that the world was ending in 1984 because of Pac-Man, and it didn't, right? And now we have Pac-Man in 7D. Like, don't worry about it, you know? It's like, and believe me, when you're all adults, there's going to be some psychotic technology that's going to be everywhere. You know, we're injecting flat screens into our brain, and I don't even need a computer anymore. I'm just like, hold on, I'm getting a call. Hey, man, what's up? Yeah, I'm just at this youth rally. Yeah, hold on. Anyway, you know, and you'll be like, dude, don't answer your phone in the middle of a rally. Like, I know. It's going to get weirder. It's going to get more tech. It's going to get crazy. The problem is not technology in and of itself. It's not even that it's distracting. It's not even that it connects us too often. The problem with it is going to be simply what Balaam faced here. It's what do we put our hope in? If you think humanity is better off because we have come up with a flat screen TV, I mean, certainly that's ridiculous. But even on the other side of it, if it's like, no, we're going downhill because of the flat screen TV, man, there's a lot worse things that could be happening. Really what it comes down to is just that. Do you put your hope in it? That's all it comes down to. Do you put your hope in these things? I mean, do you believe that we don't need God because we have drones? Who cares? Who cares how big the technology gets? It doesn't get bigger than a creator who can make donkeys talk. And when we do that, I'll be impressed. All right, it's like, dude, I got the thing that makes my donkey talk. Watch this. You know, it's like, hey, like that. Now that'll be something. But God already did that. In fact, he did that thousands of years ago, right? He's already done all the tech you could possibly do. I mean, he time travels, for crying out loud. I mean, he can do all this stuff that tech will never touch. That's all that it comes down to, is this, that I'm trusting the creator of the people who created tech. That's what I'm trusting. I trust the God who made all that stuff. That's where we'll put it. So let's leave that for your enslavement and for who we are owned by. Give it to God. He created all this stuff anyway. And that's what keeps us out of the tech, you know, drowning in it. That's what keeps us focused. You know, keeps us connected with each other. Is just not making it God, of course. Let's go ahead and say a prayer, and then we're going to break up. We're going to do a little food and travel and seeing the beach. Father, I want to just thank you for this day, and just thank you for all these young people and for their kindness and patience of just listening to a couple lessons here. I just think it's a respectable thing that they would even be willing to listen to it, and just to stay focused on it is really great. So I just pray that you'll bless them. And Father, do help us. Help us keep technology in perspective, that you knew it was coming, you knew that we would be faced with this, and there are great things that we are doing with it, and that is honorable. That there's nothing that we can bend that you've straightened. There's nothing we can straighten that you've bent. You've made things as they are, and that's how it is. And so we trust you in that. We just ask that you would never let us fall into this trap, really, this difficulty of Balaam, that we would be distracted by something to the degree of unfaithfulness because it looks bigger, shinier, better. That you would just help us to keep that in perspective. But we love you. We love what you've done for us. Thanks for cell phones. You've given us awesome stuff, and we just want to honor you over the gift. We know that you're the giver. So, Father, keep us strong in your service. It's in your Son's name we pray. Amen.